This is Guy Bogart with something more about our cats. They are just like Louise Darcy wrote in the Cats magazine concerning cats. A cat is a comfort, a close feline friend that sleeping or waking brings joy without end. A purr is so cozy, a meow says hello. Whiskers ask questions, tails curled means I know. Siamese or Persian or plain tabby cat, coon, manx or Maltese, they're all nice to pat. It's by Louise Darcy. Yes, they're all nice to pat if we don't try to understand them. It's like June Burnside writes, no answer. All wish to have a cat sitting here, creeping there, staring, glaring, smiling, beguiling, is to seek the mystery he holds within his history. From time to time, because cats, like humans, lead sometimes a happy end and sometimes a tragic life, and in modern times, as in the jungle, their deaths are so often tragedies, and because there are so many problems for their welfare to consider, I have often had to turn this facet to my listeners. But tonight we turn to a more agreeable side, for sunshine and luck and good times are also a part of the picture. Mrs. Bertha S. Whiting of Newton Center, Massachusetts, who occasionally makes contributions to this program, has sent this clipping, quote, Mrs. Finnegan by Ted Ashby. They always wanted a cat at the S.O. District Garage in Effort. There is a fish glue in the binding of the ledgers. A mouse considers fish glue real Duncan Hines eating. Quite a number of cats dropped in. Perhaps it was too noisy. Cats do not like noise, especially if it's a noise they do not understand, so none would stay. One day, a straggly old female paused at the door. She cast a speculative glance within. Hopeful garage men observed the cat sitting, sizing up the place. Quickly, they produced food. The cat was no dummy. They might be a catch in it. This was too good to be true. So the animal acted indifferent, didn't want it known she didn't have a home. However, when the meals appeared regularly and the service was neat and prompt, she cleaned herself up and decided to stay. The garage men brought her food with their own money. One evening, a driver who lives at Medford was about home when he thought of the cat. Had the man on duty thought to feed her? So he drove all the way back to Everett, to the garage. Some time ago, there was a strong evidence that the cat, seemingly feeling that the future was now more secure, resolved to make new friends, see things, do things. Apparently, she failed to exercise discretion. A garage man opened a desk drawer. The cat was in it, but she was not alone. Beside her, there were three tiny kittens. There was a conference of district manager and employees. With new responsibilities, the cat appeared worried. She must have peace of mind. The cat had done a good job. Not a single mouse had dared sample the fish glue. By the time the conference ended, the cat's long and faithful service was handsomely rewarded. Of course, board and room always had been provided, and the dish and plates decorated with the cat's name, Mrs. Finnegan. Still, a cat couldn't have a true sense of independence as long as it was depending on the kindness of humans for the necessities of life. That's all changed now. The cat is self-supporting. She can walk with head high, tail straight up. As a matter of fact, she could, if she were that sort of a cat, take a pretty lofty attitude toward assorted cats in the area. Mrs. Finnegan has been put on the SO payroll. Her salary is $6 a month, unquote. Someone has said that in literature there are only two plots, Cinderella and Jack the Giant Killer. Here is the Cinderella cat. Sarah J. Eddy, in her Alexander and Some Other Cats, quotes this from the Boston Post, unquote. A lady inserted the following in a newspaper. Wanted, a companion for a lady, a total abstainer, must be cleanly in her habits and must know a little about nursing. Comfortable home, no salary. A few days later, she received a basket containing a tabby cat with a ticket around its neck saying, in reply to your advertisement, I recommend the bearer. She is a total abstainer, cleanly in her habits and knows a little of nursing, having brought up a large family. She will be pleased to accept a comfortable home and requires no salary." Unquote. Again, opening Lynn Hamilton's Sophisticats, we listen to Kay Starbird of New York tell of the farm cat. "I can't understand it when people say that life on a farm is hard. I've a pasture lot where the thrushes lay, and an old barn, weather-scarred, and a fireside and a yard. In summer, I lie in the sun, warm grain, where the nervous field mice scurry, or safe in the house by the window pane, I purr while the raindrops hurry, for I see no need to worry. Of course, I might now and then, when the hay crops fail and the snowdrifts huddle deep, but as long as there's milk in the pail, why fuss about grain to reap? I'd personally rather sleep." It is to laugh. The friends of the birds, practically one person, whose object is to eliminate cats from human society on the false assumption that they are exterminating life and therefore destroying human civilization. In the printed statements, the organization cites the 952-page book Insects, the 1952 yearbook of agriculture. I had read this fairly well on its publication, but after the volume was cited as proof that cats should not be allowed outside their owners' yards, I made a careful recheck to find whether our government had taken up the issue. In those 952 pages are three sets of reference to the cats. First, the effect of poisonous sprays on cattle, horses, dogs, cats, chickens, and other animals. Second, insects, which sometimes act as carriers for enteritis. Third, insects, which play a part on the spread of worms in livestock, dogs, cats, and so forth. In almost 1,000 pages, there is one article mentioning birds, beasts, and bugs. But this one says nothing about cats. The world has had to fight insects long before Miss Charney discovered that they are a menace and ergo eliminate cats. I give this just so we can have a hearty laugh. But how many tens of thousands who read the newspapers in which her charges were made have read the insect book, and so accept her statement that the government has printed this large volume as an argument against cats? That's why I urge that cat lovers orient themselves in some of the stock accusations against cats so they can meet the wild ravings by calm recitation of proven scientific facts. These data are available. Incidentally, since the insect problem, beginning before man's advent on the globe and continuing, you may like to buy the book at $2.50 from the Superintendent of Documents in Washington, D.C., or go to your library. All libraries keep the series on their shelves. The 1953 yearbook might also interest you. It is on plant diseases, about 1,000 pages, and also for sale for $2.50 from the government printing office. Your congressman has a small quota, and if this is not exhausted, he will doubtless be glad to send you one on the house. This present series of the Yearbook of Agriculture, making each an exhaustive research study in a particular problem, began in 1936. I have the entire set and assure you they are a valuable part of any library. Run down or over, or whatever the direction, to your library where the entire set can be had, and you'll enjoy it. This isn't about our cats, but the veering started with a misconception about cats, so in the language of the Orient, excuse, please. My belated thanks for 5 listeners who sent in contributions for a reprinting of my Friends of the Birds for free distribution. Don't know just when this can be done, but as soon as funds are available. I personally paid half of the last edition, but want to make this one of wider scope. And my plans now are not simply to copy the original, which was used in the Marauding Cat Bill campaign, but to include briefly the facts to refute some of the false accusations against a cat. Just an unbound paper edition to be slipped into our correspondence envelopes, or maybe sold in quantities at a cost below the printing. All for the good of cats. Also, belatedly, special greetings to Herbert and Helen Edwards of Los Angeles, good friends of our cats from the start of our cats program. About all I know of them, of course, is relayed in letters to Hildebrand by Jerry, the Edwards cat. Jerry leaves a real Edwards life, which is truly the life of Riley. These fine listeners send clippings to Penelope and Hildebrand, and those two cats still lick their chops over an occasional special holiday feed which Jerry promoted in the Edwards home. I'm sure the folks would perhaps not care to be held up to the public in this fashion, but we are a fine big family, and Hildebrand insists that Jerry should take a bow, especially since this is one broadcast without a gripe, the Cinderella Saga of Felines. You've doubtless heard about the man, not a KFOX listener, who tramped 8 miles into the country and dumped the old family cat. Asked by a neighbor if he lost the cat, he replied, "Gosh, no. The only way I ever got back home was by following her." Last summer's heat, even in Southern California, reminds me of the fellow who declared that in Indio it got so hot that he saw a dog chasing a cat and both were leisurely walking. We won't bore you too long with the old and oft-repeated wheeze about the tot finding a sleeping cat purring and exclaiming that it had parked itself asleep and left its motor running. I'm sure none of the KFOX folks have any children like little Charlie. When mother asked if Charles had come in, his sister replied, "I think so. I haven't seen him, but the cat's in hiding." Recently, I read a poem on the cat in Eden, and why not? Could it have been Eden without purrs? From Lynn Hamilton's Sophisticats, I find this one by Phyllis Morden, a New York poet. "I am the cat. When Adam lay without his Eve, the cat stretched there like bark on a smooth bowl in the fresh air. When Adam felt his open side, the cat crouched by, watching the woman's wonderments, staring at her cry. When Eve tasted the forbidden fruit, the cat with quivering tongue stalked the serpent laced among leaved, waited where the transgression hung. When angels at the gate brandished the flame, the arched cat delicately came, and in a voice strident as a shout said, 'I am the cat, let me out.' When Adam delved and Eve still dreamed of contraband and sweet, the purring cat moved like a thought to shape contentment at her feet." This is Guy Bogart in happy appreciation of all that cats and folks mean in my life, with enjoyment each day in the friendship of each of these phases of life, sending a full measure of love and joy to every household and to every pet in person in your homes and offices. May the great cat in her softly padding tread across the universe purr ever softly for you.